A great moment for me, and a pleasure to bring on a very special man. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and was there in 1951 when he threw the pitch to Bobby Thompson. It is Ralph Branca. He's got a book out, A Moment in Time, which I've read and is absolutely terrific, An American Story of Baseball, Heartbreak, and Grace. And Ralph handled everything with the utmost of grace. It's a book, A Moment in Time. It's done with David Ritz. And now there's a documentary coming out about it. And I've seen the documentary. Just terrific. If you're a baseball fan and you want to know about this amazing story of Ralph Branca and Bobby Thompson, how it really happened, take a look at it. It is going to be exclusively right now through iTunes at iTunes.com/Branca's Pitch, B-R-A-N-C-A-S Pitch. On Tuesday, the 1st of October, it'll be available on DVD and digitally on iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, and Google. If you're a baseball fan, a person who enjoys a story of a man, a pitch, and a great life, you want to read this and see the DVD. Pat, we'll welcome in Patrick Connor with me. We'll welcome in Ralph Branca. Ralph, good morning.
Morning, Ralph.
Good morning.
Nice to have you on the show. Where you are, it's afternoon already, but for us, it's a nice, lazy morning in San Francisco.
Oh, well, San Francisco's always lazy mornings.
Yeah, I've seen you out here, and I know they sort of celebrated the home run, the Thompson home run, and you were out here for part of that ceremony.
Right, that was a while ago.
Yeah, that was probably in 2001 when you came out. But, Ralph, the DVD is out, and it's a terrific story of you, your life, and how you got into baseball. And for people, they think of Ralph Branca, they think, well, it's only 1951, but there was so much more to your career. You're the only living member of the 1947 World Series, and you won 21 games for the Dodgers that year as Jackie Robinson's first year. You had a front seat to baseball history back then.
Right, and I've said that. I had a front row seat to history, you know, where the color barrier was broken, and Jackie was a great guy. A lot of people in the Negro League didn't think Jackie should have been the man because there were supposedly better players. But you know what? Nobody was Jackie Robinson. He was spicy, fiery, competitive, but he was intelligent enough to not create any incidents and to conduct himself in a great manner that never got involved in any kind of incidents and just kept his, as I say, kept out of all that. Especially the first 3 years.
Boy, Ralph Branca is with us. He was a Brooklyn Dodger, a very amazing time of baseball history and social history. Ralph, I saw the movie 42 three times already. I know you're in it and you have a great appearance in it. But from your standpoint, was the movie accurate as vis-a-vis Branch Rickey and all the incidents that happened in the movie?
Yeah, the movie was very accurate. The only thing is, Rickey never came to the locker room. And he never came to the dugout, you know, the dugout or the locker room. Well, locker room, the dugout and locker room, right, correct. You know, and I don't know how many times he talked to Jackie every day, twice a week, three times a week, the first year to keep up Jackie's courage and to make him stay, you know, out of any incidents, as he said, for the first 3 years. He told Jackie he couldn't get involved. And Jackie did that, which was beyond Jackie, because he was fiery, feisty, competitive. But he did it the first year, 3 years, and he helped make it go for other players.
He did. Ralph Branca is with us. Ralph, part of what I like to talk about when I make speeches about Jackie or the movie is Leo Durocher. And I know there's a part in the book where Leo Durocher quells the petition and the desire to have Jackie off the team in the middle of the night in Panama. He bangs the pots around and everything else. And he also had an amazing impact on Willie Mays when Willie came up. Talk a little bit about Leo Durocher and that scene in the movie, how accurate that was when Durocher in the middle of the night brings everybody in.
Yeah, well, that was true. That was in Panama in 47. And a bunch of Southern guys said they didn't want to play with Jackie and had written a note that they were going to present to Branch Rickey. And Leo heard about it and he went and said, hey, read this note, you know what you can do with it. He said, he's going to be on the team, and if you don't like it, you might not be on the team. And of course, Rickey traded a bunch of guys over to Pittsburgh, I think deliberately because they were the worst team in the league at that point. And so they were gone. And, you know, either that year or next year. But, you know, Jackie was by a strange position, first base, played it well. And I think he hit .297 his first year, which is very, very good for a rookie. And he was terrific. He helped us win the pennant.
Boy, amazing. Ralph Branca is joining us this morning. So life goes on. The 1947 World Series, the amazing game by Bill Bevins, where he ends up giving up the hit to Lavaggetto to break up the no-hitter. But your career goes on. In 1951, the Dodgers are playing great, and all of a sudden the Giants come out of nowhere in August.
No. The Giants came out of stealing.
Well, I know. I'm going to get to that.
Yeah, I know you're going to get to it. When guys call me, they say, do you want to talk about 51? I said, yeah, I didn't cheat. But go ahead.
All right. I'm just setting it up. So you got this 13.5 game lead in August, and all of a sudden the Giants start winning, and they tie you, and of course it ends up in the playoff. But now we have subsequently learned through Joshua Prager, Sal Evars, and others, Hank Schenz, that the Giants were stealing signs the whole way. So you tell the story.
Well, you know, I got traded over to Detroit. I hurt my back in 52. Got traded to Detroit in the middle of 53. And a year later, I roomed with Teddy Gray, and he was one of the leaders of the club. You know, he was one of the guys who directed stuff that the team did. And so we were in, I don't know, somewhere, I want to say Cleveland, and this was like a May of the following year. And he said, I got to tell you something. I'm not supposed to tell you, but I have to tell you. And he told me how a guy who then was with the St. Louis Browns, his name was Earl Rapp, told him how the Giants stole a sign. Earl had been with the Giants in 51. So Earl Rapp told him how they stole the signs. And, you know, they had a telescope. They hooked up a buzzer system to the bullpen and to the dugout. And they gave us all the signs. And they were in the Giant locker room, which was in dead center field. So, I mean, looking through a telescope and hooking up a buzzer system, it's really pure BS. I mean, you want to play the game, you play it on the field between the lines. And to do what they did was despicable. Now, several years after I got through playing, and I met Sal Evars. I played against Sal in high school. He was playing for White Plains, and I was playing for the Mount Vernon High School, A.B. Davis. And I said, Sal, I understand why you did so well at home, you know, you stole all the signs. I can't understand why you did so well on the road. And he said, we stole them on the road. And I just shook my head. How can you be that despicable to steal a pennant from a team that deserved it? Somewhere along the line, I want to say after 2-3 weeks, and they got close, because in 2 weeks they were 5 games behind, not 13. And so they stole them on the road. Except they couldn't steal them
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. And they didn't steal them. Well, they could barely steal them in Pittsburgh. But they stole them Chicago, St. Louis, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and Boston.
So, but you said...
I said to them, you didn't steal them in Brooklyn? They said, no. They were afraid if they got caught, they would have been killed. My answer was, rightfully so.
Ralph,
the Dodger fans were deprived of having their team represent the league, and the Dodger owners, you know, not very good.
All right. Ralph Branca is with us, and Ralph tells a story, and, of course, it leads up to the fact that he throws this pitch to Bobby Thompson, and Thompson hits it for the home run, the shot heard around the world, and all that stuff. But I ask you this, Ralph. You sat on this story for so long. How come you didn't come forward with it if you knew all this in the 50s?
Because I'm Ralph Branca. I didn't want to be a crybaby and talk about it. You know, I wanted somebody else to break the story. Then I could talk about it. You know, didn't dwell on that. Just that was my decision. To let somebody else break the story. And Josh Prager did that in 2001. You know, when the Giants admitted they stole the signs. I think they stole them in 54, to be truthful. Because the Dodgers were a better team, and the Giants shouldn't have won.
Ralph, let me ask you this. Did Thompson ever admit knowing
no.
the son? Did he ever
never admitted it, but I think he knew that I knew, and I thought he knew. But we never talked about it, and I was terribly disappointed in him that when the it came out, and I asked him, did he have the sign in that pitch? Hell, if I have to give an answer, it's no. I said, that's a funny way of saying yes. But I listened to him several times. We were on the radio with either Mike and the dog or whomever, and he would say, you know, I tell myself, watch and wait, get a good pitch, you know. He said, the first pitch was right down the middle. Now, you couldn't put it more down the middle if you had a transit. You know, crotch-eyed, dead center. He said, and the guys on the bench wanted to kill me. And I'm sitting next to him, going, kill? I never use kill as a verb. If a guy on the Dodgers took a pitch, like the first pitch fastball, I'd go, what was he thinking of? He knows a guy's a fastball pitcher. What was he thinking of? What was he looking for? But never kill. And so, in a way, he admitted, but he never admitted, like, straight out. And he went to his grave, never admitting he had to sign that pitch. And yet, the guys on the bench wanted to kill him the pitch before, and then he swings at a pitch that's up and in and nowhere near his strike, and he hits a home run.
Yeah, he hit a sort of a golf shot, and that was a short left-field fence, and of course...
Yeah, well, that's Charlie Dressen's fault, because we won the toss. And you play the first game one part, and then last two in another. And you know that getting last at bats is very important. And we should have played the first one in the Polo Grounds and the next two at Brooklyn. But Charlie was a know-it-all. And he cost us the pennant because he pitched a guy named Irv Palika in the first game. We were 13 up. Palika's got a sore arm. And he tells Charlie. Charlie says, no, it's all in your head. I walked into the trainer's room, and there was Palika with his arm in a whirlpool. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm soaking my arm. I said, why? He said, it's sore. I said, no, it's not. Didn't Charlie tell you it was in your head? Soak your head. So, of course, he gave up 3 runs. I don't think he got an out. And we lost 3-2.
Well, Clem Labine came back and saved you in the second game.
No. I pitched. This was in August.
Oh, okay.
I pitched the next game.
Okay.
And Wes Westrum, I think, was 0-83 off of me. And he hit a home run, high fastball.
Oh, I see.
And I lost 3-2.
I see. Hey,
Rip and I used to strike him out 3 times a game.
Ralph, Eddie Montague, you know him, the National League umpire, is with us. And Eddie, you're talking to Ralph Branca. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ralph. How you doing?
Okay, Ed, and yourself?
Great. I'm at the ballpark, so every day I come to the ballpark, it's terrific.
You got it.
All right, Eddie.
That place better.
Eddie, I'm going to ask you this. You know, Ralph, obviously the story is out of stealing signs and all that, and 51 and maybe even 54. You've umpired so many games behind the plate. Do you ever suspect anyone in the scoreboard? You know, you hear these stories all the time. Al Worthington wouldn't pitch on certain teams because he didn't want to steal signs and all that. Do you ever have any of that suspicion?
Well, I mean, you look out there and you think, boy, it'd be really easy to look in from somewhere, but... And now, with TV and the cameras and stuff, I'm thinking it'd be really easy to get the science and stuff like that. But I've thought about that, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what? The Giants had their locker room in center field, and the Cubs and White Sox and Cleveland had scoreboards in center field. So you had to watch to see if they were given signs from the scoreboard. But you mentioned Al Worthington. It's funny because... I went to the minors. It was a giant organization at Minneapolis. And Al Worthington and Alex Konikowski, two relievers for the Giants. And I was warming up behind the stands down the right field line. And some joker started getting on my case. And, of course, I yelled back at him. And they said, hey, we have to talk to you. So they took me into the locker room, which is right on the end of the stands. The stands in Omaha went from... first base, around the third. And our locker room was right there at first base. And they took me in the locker room and said, we have to tell you something to make you feel better. I said, no, I know all about it. No, you don't know this. I said, I told you I know all about it. How you they stole the signs from the locker room with Herman Franks and Hank Shins, and their jaws dropped. You knew? I said, yeah, I know. But... they didn't think I could know, but as I said, Teddy Gray told me in May of, say, 1954.
Wow. All right. The book is A Moment in Time. That whole story is in there. The DVD is coming out October the 1st, and it's about Ralph Branca. Ralph, tell us a little bit about the book for the fans. I've read the book. It's terrific. They don't know. You grew up a Giants fan, and you got signed by the Dodgers. You had to go home and tell everybody the Dodgers signed you. That wasn't so easy.
Yeah, well, listen, you know what? I blame the Giants. I blame the Yankees because I pitched in high school and did very, very well. You know, like we had 14 games, and I pitched, I'm going to say, at least 12 and did well. And they never came around to scout me or talk to me. And the year before, I went to the Giants for a tryout, and it rained. So I should come back tomorrow. Well, tomorrow I had 300 kids. I never got to throw. Then we went to Yankee Stadium, and they had a scout named Chief Bender. He was part Indian or all Indian. And he liked me, and on my card it says, too young, get in touch with him next year, because I was only 16.
Wow.
And they never got in touch with me next year. Yeah. And then the Dodgers, I went to the Dodgers, and they liked me, had me throw batting practice. You know, the 16-year-old kid throwing batting practice, I got a bit of a swelled head, you know. But I got the ball over, and the next year, start of spring training, they played three games, usually with the Yankees, and they had me throw batting practice. I was pitching for the high school. So the Dodgers stayed on my case, and that's how I signed with them. Unfortunately, I wasn't smart enough to hold out and get a bonus.
Go ahead, Pat.
Well, Ralph, when you watch baseball today, what do you think of the current state of baseball? Do you enjoy it, or is it less than game? You like it?
Baseball's still the best game of all. I watch it. I watch some of the dumb plays that they make, you know, and I go, they don't know the game. But, you know, realistically, guys are might, they play, spend time in the minors, learn how to play the game. Unfortunately, these guys let stuff happen that shouldn't happen. Like, guys on second, grounded a short, and he goes to third and gets thrown out. Well, I saw a guy do it three times in a week. When's he going to learn? The ball has to go through for you to go to third base. You know, you're not going to score. But, you know, infielders or outfielders calling for pops and then backing away and letting it fall in. And so, but it's still the best game of all. I mean, you can't beat baseball.
No, you can't. And you did it very well, Ralph, a 21-game winner in 1947, 88 wins in his big league career before a sore arm.
Well, the thing about it is the Mets have a kid who's 24. When I was 24, I had 56 wins. And you know what? Charlie Justin didn't pitch me in 1946. I started once a month till September. They started me, and I threw back-to-back shutouts. And then I started the first game in playoff history against the Cardinals. 20 years old.
Wow.
And that, you know, I only won three games, and the next year I won 21. And I said, if that dope dressing had pitched me, you know, in turn, not once a month, I'd have probably won another 10 games. So, as I said, I had 56 wins, had two stupid teammates who hit me in the shin at 48, Tommy Brown and Billy Cox, whose numbers and their IQ are the same.
Three and five.
That's your number. But you know what? I had 12 wins at the All-Star break, and I had to go on the DL and only won two games the last half of 48.
Well,
and the next year, I wasn't throwing 93, 4, 5, 89, 90, but learned how to pitch and was 10-1 on the All-Star at the July 1st and only won three games because I had to go on the DL. So I could have had 70 wins, 75 wins at 24.
Well, the book is terrific. Your story is amazing. You're a very special man. You're an accomplished singer. You're the all-time winner on concentration. And it's a pleasure to have you on, Ralph. And I'm glad that we can have you on and tell the story.
Well, thank you. Unfortunately, I don't root for the Giants.
That's okay. It's all right.
I'm a Yankee fan. I haven't played for them for half a year.
We can understand that. Believe
sure.
me. We can understand it. If you root for the Giants, I'd say.
The Dodgers, which were my first team.
All right. So, Ralph, you're an icon of baseball history, and I'm glad that the story of how this really came down could come out, and you've done an amazing job in your life of handling it, so it's a pleasure to have you on.
Hey, thanks for having me. Tell that umpire and his dog to to find their way to their seat.
Hey, Ralph, I'm looking at this. I see you were ejected, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Is that correct? I see Barlick got you one time.
Yeah, well, that wasn't me. The whole team got ejected.
Oh.
But I got ejected in the World Series of 52, and I was sitting next to Dick Williams. Another leather lung, loud mouth. And he was a good bench jockey.
Yeah, he did have a leather lung.
Equally as good as Branca. And I wasn't eligible to play. I had a bad back in 52. So, about the third inning, I said, hey, stupid, keep quiet, you're not eligible. So I didn't say a word from, say, the fourth inning on. And about the seventh inning, Larry Goetz turned and said, get out of here. I turned to Dick Williams on my right and said, Dick, you got to go. I'll see you. I'm not going anywhere.
I see that.
He said, it's going to cost you money. I'm not going anywhere. With that, he said, Branca. I got up and I said, Larry, you're still guessing wrong. Now, he got back behind the plate. And
four of them were for bench jockeying.
Yogi said, that wasn't Branca. I know his voice. But they fined me $150, supposedly. But they never collected it. I never heard about it. So I think that Goetz threw me out because he knew I wasn't eligible.
All right. Ralph, thank you so much. And the best
guys,
of Bobby Valentine
well,
and the family.
And next year's hopefully a better year for the Giants.
All right.
But not as good as the Dodgers.
All right, Ralph. We understand.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Be well.
Thanks, Ralph.
All right. That's Ralph Branca.